It's a japa like this, mimicking the dialing of a phone. This is what his japa is. You know, and it was unfortunately quite true. And this busyness became, at one point, became a major. The means is escape into self-assertive activity, and the end result, especially if is manic types, people who are busy all their time. You see this also in Karmi society. People who are always busy are always working, and their work has a certain driven quality. You know what I mean by driven? It's obsessive. They have to go on, keep going and going and going. So it also can happen in ISKCON, and when that happens, it's often a concealment mechanism. And so one should watch it, because one should understand what is the foundational activities of Krishna consciousness. If I'm so busy spreading the Krishna consciousness movement that I don't have time to be Krishna conscious, then something's gone wrong somewhere. Because sometimes it's easier to preach Krishna consciousness or to spread Krishna consciousness than it is to actually practice it. Especially if spreading Krishna consciousness, our job may be something that's fairly mechanical. You know, some people have gotten book distribution down to a mechanism, you know, a certain routine that you can do whether you're Krishna conscious or not. Or sometimes we have a job in Krishna consciousness that we can do. You know, you can go on the altar and be a pujari. And you can be there, or you can just be going through the motions. So many of the activities of Krishna consciousness, you can just do it and get away with it for a long time. So this is something I think our movement tends to be prone to, and devotees in our movement tend to be prone to.
What would be the typical thing that one's stealing in this conversion?
Oh, still the concealment is always the same. That actually, to me, the concealment is like this. Like if you're alert in Krishna consciousness, you know what you have to do to surrender to Krishna more. But sometimes you back away from that surrender and you just want to take it easy. And that's really when the concealment reactions follow in. So you can be concealing different things. But sometimes people are actually concealing, breaking regular principles. Sometimes they're concealing and they've got a problem in their spiritual life, and they're not dealing with it. See, having a problem is not the problem. Having a problem and not dealing with it is the problem. So the problem will be different from person to person to person. You know, exactly what it is. And maybe it's something gross, or maybe something fairly subtle. The sense of personal failure, it's your sense of personal failure. I mean, your sense of personal failure, it can be the fact that it can be coming from the fact that you can be doing everything right and chanting all your rounds, but actually when you chant your rounds, you are distracted in mind all the time. And so when you chant your rounds, you're just forcing yourself to mechanically do it. So that becomes a concealment problem will set in. You see, if we're not trying to become free from offenses, then usually some kind of concealment may take place. We can be as fallen as we want to be. But if we're trying to become free from offenses, then you won't get concealment reactions. So So the way I understand it is, see, good sadhana means chanting the holy name while trying to become free from offenses. And so we're well situated when we are working on those offenses. So in generally, what particular it can be, anything. But remember, what you're concealing is really your sense of personal failure. This is the standard, and here's where I'm at. Now, I can't stand it. And instead of the right way of saying, yep, this is where I am, this is what I have to do to get here, instead of saying, this is what I have to do to get here, I'm now going to say to myself, well, I'm really better than that. So then I'll say, see, I'm a great devotee because I'm doing so many things. See, sometimes in ISKCON, we try to quantify spiritual advancement. So we distributed so many books, we passed out so many plates of prasadam, we did something we could put a number, we had so many rathiyatras, whatever it may be, if we can put a number on it, therefore I'm an advanced devotee. I collected so much money, therefore I'm an advanced devotee. And that becomes the symbol to me of what's advanced, rather than what I know is really advanced. What is really advanced? How much do I actually love Krishna? How far am I becoming every day more and more attached to Krishna and detached to matter? Those are the things that we have to see. How far is lust and greed and anger decreasing? Maybe they're the same year after year after year. Maybe lust and greed and anger are increasing. But still, so is my, you know, numbers on whatever scale I'm operating on. You understand? Is that clear? Yes?
A person feels, here I am, that is the standard. Mm-hmm. And then he feels discomfort.
Right. A sense of personal failure.
I thought he makes up somewhere else and something else.
Yeah. And instead of dealing with the sense of personal failure, frankly, by saying, boy, I have all these anarthas and offenses, this is what I have to do to get rid of them. Instead, there's a kind of cover-up. And he wants to maintain now his self-respect and believe himself coming to the highest standard by substituting something else. Or by finding fault with everybody else, or by, you know, these different sorts of concealment devices.
It seems that there may be a point when there's a conscious effort to that concealment, but then there's a momentum.
Yeah.
It comes in where it's almost like, or another way of putting it, the weeds.
Yeah, that's right.
Growing in so much that there's not much they can do, to be frank. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, you may get so far in that you can't get out anymore. Or a lot of time hypocrisy doesn't start off that way. One who's trying to maintain a certain standard, he falls down, and life has to go on, so he doesn't make a big deal of it. But then it keeps on falling, and then it becomes a habitual concealment. But you see, there's hypocrisy, and this bluffing is hypocrisy, is another word for hypocrisy. I wanted to get to that today, bluffing, because that's a word that shows up in our scriptures, which we'll discuss tomorrow. Dumba, D-A-M-B-H-A, Dumba. And also, Dumba Yajna is a term that's in our scriptures. Dumba Yajna. Dumba is one of the byproducts of Brahma, bluff. Pride, hypocrisy, self-importance, you know, we'll talk about it. Yeah?
But there does seem to be one astra that even if one's pretty far along in its concealment, it reveals
yeah.
that humbles himself and reveals that.
Yeah.
And that's when
usually, if these, we have to talk about this later. But sometimes one reason I think Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't do anything with it doesn't say this, but my intuition with Ramachandra Puri is it was a waste of time to bother. He was so far gone. And Boysen says this too, you gotta deal with the people you can help. Some people whose defense mechanisms are so heavy, whose concealment is so deep, that there's absolutely nothing you can do. Except, you know, await the mercy of Krishna, who may do something to smash them and break it up. And they may also have one of these eruptive kind of a things. But sometimes there's nothing you can do. Sometimes it's very difficult. If it goes too far for too long or becomes so much of a habit.
But it does seem that within Krishna consciousness, the prognosis is much more favorable because we have all these sadhana tools.
I hope so. Let's see. Yeah? I hope it's more favorable. It's also, but you know, we have a danger because we have also a very high standard. And in a way, the higher your standard, the bigger your danger. For various these sorts of concealment reactions. Because the gap will still be there. You know? I mean, because, you know, you may be very advanced and still feel a gap. But the real advancement has to be not that there is a gap that is between what ought to be and what you will feel you are. But the question always has to be how you are dealing with it. Because we find, as I mentioned before, people saying prayers like, if I had any love for Krishna, why would I even be alive? I couldn't take a breath in his absence, you know. That's a sense of personal failure. But it's an ecstasy because it's been dealt with so properly. And it becomes a manifestation of total Vaishnava humility. Okay, so we'll keep on going with this. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So we are continuing on our discussion of this chart. And we are still in the level of various forms of concealment.
Dumba,
bluffing. That word, if you look up bluff, bluffing, and folio, you found that it was a pretty frequently word used by Srila Prabhupada, actually. We are not bluff, called the Mayavadis bluffing. So, especially, you know, I am God, that's definitely the high point of fictitious self-importance. But the word comes up, interestingly enough, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, in Text 3, there's an account there from Maitreya of the sons of Brahma, although this chapter is about Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. Before he gets to Dhruva Maharaj, he's talking about the creation of Brahma, by Brahma. So he talks about the Kumaras and Narada and Ribhu and Hamsa, those sons of Brahma who became Urdhvareta and left home. Then he says in text 2, another son of Lord Brahma was irreligion, Adharma, whose wife name was falsity, Mrisha. From their combination, Prabhupada says, first incident of incest, from their combination were born two demons named Dumba, or bluffing, D-A-M-B-H-A, dumba, or bluffing, and maya, or cheating. So they're right there at the top level of the demonology. Huh? These two demons were taken by a demon named Niriti, who had no children. Somehow or other they were adopted. And then it goes on from Dumba and Maya were born Greed and Nikriti. Oh yeah, is that his name? Niriti, and then born a child named Nikriti or Cunning. From them came Krodha, anger, Himsa, envy, and from their combination born Kali, our famous Kali, and his sister Durukti, harsh speech. And then there's further down the line, Mrityu, Bhiti, death, fear, then Yatana, excessive pain, and Niraya, hell. Huh? What means what? Which one? Kali. Oh, it doesn't say here.
Kali means quarrel.
Kali, you know, quarrel, age of quarrel. Yeah. Same Kali, the short egg. Yeah, right. My dear Vidura, I have summarily explained the causes of devastation. So those causes are there in the beginning. One who hears this description three times attains piety and washes the sinful contamination from his soul. Now, listen to Prabhupada's purport about this. The descendants of irreligion and falsity, born one after another, are bluffing, cheating, greed, cunning, anger, envy, quarrel, harsh speech, death, fear, severe pain, and hell. All these descendants are described as signs of devastation. This is the purport, text 5 I'm reading from. If a person is pious and hears about these causes of devastation, he will feel hatred for all these, and that will cause his advancement in the life of piety. Piety refers to the process of cleansing the heart. So that's the point to note, the process of cleansing the heart. As recommended by Lord Chaitanya, one has to cleanse the dust from the mirror of the mind, and then advancement on the path of liberation begin. Here also the same process is recommended. We should learn to despise all the causes of devastation, beginning from irreligion and cheating, and then we shall be able to make advancement in a life of piety. The possibility of our attaining Krishna consciousness will be easier, and we shall not be subjected to repeated devastation, that is, repeated birth and death in the material world. So in one sense, you can see that what we are studying here in this section of Boys and Other causes of devastation. So in other places, in the Bhagavad Gita, the term Dumba shows up also. A couple of places, huh? Oh, yeah, here. My other page, I wrote the verses down. Yeah, in the 16th chapter, involving the demons. The demonology is described there. I've even got little places. Yeah, taking shelter of insatiable lust. Kamam asutya. And absorbed in the conceit of pride and false prestige. So Dumba there is pride, mana, false prestige. They are always sworn to unclean work. So this Dambharamana Madhavita, absorbed in the mentality of Dumba and Mana. That's 16:10. And then 16:17 is interesting. Self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige, they sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only, without following any rules and regulations. So the operative word, yajante nama yajnaste dambena avidda purvikam. Dambena, dambena, avidi purvakam. The same, remember, about demigod worship being avidi purvakam? So they perform sacrifice also, avidi purvakam, in a wrong way, dambena.
By
means of out of pride or bluffing. So later on, In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, 26, verse 25, and talking about the different causes of going to hell, one is the performance of Dumbha Yajna. Dumbha Yajna is a sacrifice, is defined there in the word for word as a sacrifice performed to increase prestige. Right?
That's the word, right?
Dumbha Yajna, you know the Sanskrit. Dumbha Yajna. Sacrifice performed to increase prestige. Especially this one refers to killing many animals. One who performs a sacrifice to increase prestige and many animals are being killed goes to the hell known as Vishasana. Yeah.
Bhakti Siddhanta had that prayer to the mind. What kind of Vaishnava are you?
Yeah.
And you're chanting the holy name.
But only for reputation, right? Mm-hmm. Going to a secluded place just to get your big following, reputation as a saintly person. Later on, where we come to the part of Bhagavatam that's translated, you know, in the 11th or 12th canto, where Dumbha shows up, there it's translated as false pride and hypocrisy, which are dictionary definitions, hypocrisy. And there in the purport it says, the word Dumbha indicates a self-righteous hypocrite, someone not so much concerned with being saintly as with appearing saintly. Yeah?
When you refer to some place, could you spread another word to those of us who are listening to this story?
All right. Where I referred to is Bhagavad Gita 6.
You see, the board is unfortunately 1610.
This chalk is inferior.
Yeah.
And 1617. Yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam 482 and 485. Mark, that's the one where the Dumbha is mentioned as the offspring of Brahma. And then if you're interested in finding about Dumbha Yajna, that's 526-25. Okay? Those are those references. Yeah, I don't know where I got the other definition. I didn't write it down, but somewhere. So these are all the meanings of Dumbha, this bluffing. Now, we should recognize, I think, the appearance of bluffing as this idea of increasing one's prestige. And,
It's like charity in the mode of passion.
Charity in the mode of passion. But this is a way that what Prabhupada refers to as the subtle forms of sex desire sometimes get manifest in religious circles. Subtle forms of sex desire being desire for what? Profit, adoration, and distinction. Otherwise, you know, puja, pratishta. These are weeds that grow up sometimes. And that's when we get Dumbha. Now again, this is a concealment device. The goal is seen, but not very clearly. Remember, oblivion means, if we go back and we look at Boisen on page 152, he explains about this awareness that's on this level, the confused awareness. Right? Isn't that what he calls it in the chart? Confused? Awareness is confused. So he says here on 152, by clear awareness we mean the bringing into the open of whatever it is that is causing the inner disharmony. The individual not only recognizes it himself, but he is ready also to acknowledge it to those whose love is necessary to him. He is not afraid to tell. Boisen's refrain. By oblivion, now we go to the bottom, is meant forgetfulness not of the difficulty, but of the ideal, a victory of the segmental tendencies. Between these two is the region of obscurity and confusion and befuddlement. So the person is unclear. which characterize not merely the attempt at concealment and self-deception, but also of uncompleted assimilation, partially assimilated to the higher goal, but not quite. Now, I want to use an example of Dumba in ISKCON. And this, I am proceeding with caution here because I may here commit offense to some genuinely sacred cows as well as sacred cows. But this happened in ISKCON, and this is a history that I ought not to be forgotten because we don't want to repeat this in the future. You know, the philosopher Santayana has often quoted his famous saying, those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So I want us to remember some of the bad things that happened. We would like to tell our glorious history, but if we forget the past. So I want to talk about a certain formation of Sankirtan as Dumba Yajna in ISKCON. The compromised Sankirtan. And I think by telling this tale, as I see it, and I'm going to be talking mostly about North America, but because that's what I know by first-hand experience. This was compromised Sankirtan. That's our sacrifice for the age. And definitely a compromise reaction worked its way into it and gradually became more and more prominent. Now, I'm not making a blanket statement that all Sankirtan devotees were insincere or compromised or bluffing. But there was a continuum. I think in some geographical places in the world, Sankirtan was always done very purely. And there was a continuum of gradual shadings of compromise until in some places of the world, Sankirtan was done in a criminal way, and people actually ended up in jail, and rightly so. This is our history. I mean, on Balaram's appearance day, Kirtanananda got sentenced to 20 years in jail.
Really?
For Dumba Yajna, in effect. Called racketeering in Karmic parlance. Now, it started with this. Now, see, there was a clear awareness to go, we want to please Srila Prabhupada. And it became perfectly clear to everybody that Srila Prabhupada became really pleased by book distribution. Right? So that was clear. Now, to do book distribution in great numbers and to do it purely, I guess the model or paradigm of pure book distribution goes something like this. A devotee is absorbed blissfully in relishing the nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. He becomes so happy and overjoyed by everything he's learning and getting enlightened by Srimad Bhagavatam that he just has to go out and share it with others. I mean, this is how, you know, sometimes books or movies without any advertising becomes big success. They call it word of mouth. There's no advertising campaign, just people see this movie or read this book and they go out and buy copies and give them to their friends. Right? This is what happens sometimes. Without any hype, without any publicity, without any advertisement. It just catches a hold and suddenly it becomes a big success. So this is kind of what Sankirtan is really like. You share what your overflowing feelings with others. This is wonderful. I mean, this is how people become drug addicts. Wow, I just had this ecstatic experience, and it's your friend, not necessarily a dope dealer, says, try it, you'll love it too. Right? So things spread because people have something that makes it happy, and naturally they want to share it with others. Well, this is what book distribution at its best really is. There's actual delight and spiritual advancement and great help from reading Prabhupada's books, and you want to give them to other people. But this kind of Sankirtan is maybe not always available. When you're going out just chanting, you're in a group, it's pretty easy to feel ecstatic and communicate that to other people, I think. But when you're distributing books, maybe it takes more realization. But see, Prabhupada had a complaint about us. He said, you think my books are just for distribution. He was complaining that he was writing all his books and his disciples weren't reading them. So something was getting short-circuited. But what happened is some people found a way to increase book distribution. First it started off and people were actually doing it the right way, and people continued to do it the right way. But then some people discovered a gimmick in North America. And this gimmick, a gimmick means a trick or a material device, went by the name the change-up. Have you all heard this word, the change-up? Are those from North America? The change-up. And actually, there were two forms of change-up. One was illegal, which I won't even talk about, because that was actually banned after a while. But the other change-up, the legal change-up, continued, and in fact, the success of ISKCON was built upon this change-up technique. By the change-up technique, it was found out that you could take a brand new devotee who didn't know much about Krishna consciousness and turn him into a very successful book distributor almost overnight if he could just be the right kind of person to master the change-up technique. It worked in airports. And this is how it worked. When you went out on Sankirtan, you had a float, which is a big wad of $1 bills. You had like $100, $1 bill. But this is happening in my own airport, so it was going on under my jurisdiction. Although I actually tried to stop it as a temple president. This is being propagated by Tripurari and the Radha Damodar airport party. And all it did was gain me a reputation, which I have to this day, of being against book distribution. But I was really the change-up that bothered me. And actually even for practical reasons, but, which I'll explain. What happened with the change-up is you had a whole bunch of bills. And so a person would agree to take a book for $5, say. The person would open his wallet. You'd look inside and you say, oh, you have a 20. I have lots of ones. Can I give you change for a 20? He gives you the 20. You pull out your float. And you start counting off five ones. You hand it, okay, here's five. Can you leave it at that? We know we're really helping people out. And da 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 da. And the guy is real, oh, man, I need this money. So you have count back five more ones. How about leaving it at 10? Well, all right. And then, now you got 10. So you got $10 reward, you have five. Some people were very skillful at this. Other people were relatively clumsy. In fact, most people were clumsy rather than skillful. But it tripled or quadrupled the amount of money. So basically what it was a psychological device. That in other words, the person gave you the money and then he had to negotiate with you to get his change back. It was a power transaction in which you now had the upper hand. There was nothing spiritual about it. It would have worked for anything. Right? That was the change-up. Now, book distribution in North America just blossomed. I mean, so much money came in. We built temples, we built buses, we had this, that. The BBT became very powerful. Money was coming in like crazy. It was so successful, everybody was ecstatic. Prabhupada, of course, was seeing the scores of book distribution, how much money was coming in, was delighted. And actually, then what happened? Here's a hidden history of ISKCON. I'll see how many of you know about this. Does anybody know what happened to the Sankirtan training film that was made by Yadubar, starring Tripurari? What happened is the next big event of the BBT is they got Yadubar and Tripurari and some other devotees, Pragosh, and they followed them into the airport and they filmed them. This is Sankirtan, right? And we heard about this film and we heard about how this is going to revolutionize, it's going to be the training film for everybody, right? So the film was made. Now, I was just a lowly temple president in those days, so I don't really know the inside story, but Somehow or other, somebody thought that let's show it first to some GBCs, and we had our lawyer, Mr. Barry Fisher. See, this time we were certain that we were being victorious, because one after other, our lawyers, Armarinder and Barry Fisher, working together, using their freedom of religion, the Constitution of the United States, were opening up airports more and more and more for book distribution. We were writing legal history and religious freedom for America. And we were invincible. Now, as the voice of one crying in the wilderness, what I saw was happening in my particular airport is people were taking the books, but they were also very angry at the devotees. They would get a book and they would be mad. And in fact, the first clue I had that something was going on really weird, well, I didn't like it anyway intuitively, and I saw that people were getting mad, but what was happening in our airport, and this was happening in other airports, is all over the airport the janitors were collecting discarded Bhagavatams. People would get the book and then leave it or throw it away. They had closets full of them. And the Sankirtan devotees were buying them back from the janitor. 50 cents a book. Now you paid at that time, I don't know, $1.50 a book to the BBT. So this time your profit margin was bigger. So this way so many books were getting recycled. And the more they were recycled, actually, the more money you were making. Because remember, the temples were living on the difference. I mean, this was our only source of income. Why were all these books being discarded? You know? So what happened is people were actually becoming very angry at us. Anyway, this training film was made, which showed the change-up in all its brilliant efficacy by its most adept practitioners. They sat down for a first screening with some GBC members and Barry Fisher. Barry Fisher went berserk. He said, this film has to be destroyed. On the spot, it has to be. Every single copy of this film has to be destroyed. See, what Barry Fisher imagined was having a case in court and the other side knowing about this film and subpoenaing it, you know, putting a court order to show it, and any jury or judge seeing this film would have instantly seen the devotees as engaging in premeditated cheating, scamming,
ripping
off, whatever you want to call it. See, so there was a real difference between the way we were seeing ourselves and the way people from the outside were seeing us. And the devotees were completely oblivious. We were just surrounded by mirrors, but actually they were one way and everybody was looking in, watching us. And we didn't think people didn't see. All we saw is we're spreading Prabhupada's books, you see. Because it was a device. Anybody, no matter whether they read it, they could just learn these techniques to be a book distributor. About the film? Yeah, it was brought to him a number of times. But especially though it was brought to Prabhupada about illegal things and about lying. He said, our men must be adored as being honest. But you have to have understand that now some of the biggest GBC around Prabhupada had their righteous credit enlarged more and more by being big book distributors, you know, by distributing more. There was competition who could distribute the most books. So partly was that when people tried to present this to Prabhupada in a clear way, there were other people there to argue with them. You can see it in folio, actually. Or the other problem that happened is some people outside of ISKCON, like Siddha Sarup's group, who weren't preaching and weren't distributing books, were complaining about the devotees. And some of the people who also voiced complaints had sympathies with Siddha Swarup, Ananta Goswami in Hawaii. So that was another difficulty. So there were some problems there. But at any rate, the film was, Yadubar told me how he'd spent so much effort making this beautiful film and he was out on the Venice beach burning it at night. Chipperari wanted to argue that let's keep one copy, let's show it once to the devotees in Mayapur, and then destroy it. And Barry Fisher, he wanted right there that night every single copy of this film destroyed. This is what truly happened.
Was it like a 16mm?
No, I don't know. It must have been a 16mm film. Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't CinemaScope. Yeah, that's what we had in those days, was 16mm. This is before video cassette recordings. So anyway, there was a great deal of success. Then what began to happen is we began to lose court cases. You see, people thought, well, you know, the law is actually quite flexible. And if people really don't want you, if they really got something against you, they'll find some way to get rid of you. And when I used to talk to our lawyers about, you know, we're going to have problems, they said, don't worry, you know, we got the First Amendment, no problem, we're just winning one victory after another. But I didn't think it was that absolute myself. And as it turns out, it wasn't, of course. They began to find ways. And so in a few court cases, we began to lose them. And some judges were writing devastating opinions about what we were up to. And just at that point, finally the leadership in ISKCON North America began to reconsider what to do. At that point, our reputation was in ruins. Meanwhile, there was an anti-cult movement growing up at the same time. And this was the one thing they had against us. Airport book distribution. There were cartoons about us in Mad Magazine. I mean, it was a national... You know, it was the thing that people hated about us the most. Those people in the airports.
Johnny Carson.
Everybody, everywhere along the line. You know, it was, and it finally, then, but finally when we began to lose the court cases, the penny dropped, you know, ding, the light bulb went on. And so then what happened is in 1977, unfortunately, at a time where Prabhupada was not available to help us, the North American GBC realized that we had a problem and that our book distribution was damaging our reputation. And then the North American GBC made this fateful decision to separate Sankirtan, to separate book distribution from fundraising. It was the fact that we had mixed together our raising funds for our movement with the book distribution. That was their diagnosis of the problem. See, it didn't really get to the heart of the problem. But that was their diagnosis. Now, people still wanted to preach Sankirtan. Now, see, I had to get on the case of one professor who said in 1977, who interpreted...